Coming up, socialism, hijacked word, a whole lot of Magnum for the Bruins, the greatest sax solo, tweeting Roger Ebert badly, the Vancouver riots, and who cares if it's drafty? That's on the gist of it.
Politics, sports, entertainment, pop culture. It's all fair game here. Somewhere in the city of Toronto, two brains are about to collide. What will remain is the gist of it. Here now are Don Landry and Bill Hayes.
First of all, Bill, I want to apologize. Not to you, but to the listeners. This podcast is probably getting up on the web a little bit late. We had some technical difficulties. Well, I go over to Bill's place somewhere in the city of Toronto. And, there's construction going on. Jackhammering all over the place. We do a few takes. No, you can hear the jackhammering in the background. Now, it did, in my mind, improve the quality of the show. You disagreed. And so we decided to go to another secret location somewhere in the city of Toronto, Rob Ford's basement, because he's not here. So let's give them the gist of it.
Bombs away, boys. Bombs away.
What the hell is wrong with Rob Ford? I'm not talking generally speaking here either. Something specific. Let me set the scene for you. The province has offered to pay for two public health nurses. The cost is about $170,000 a year. Or if you're a sports fan, what is that? It's barely more than your average Boston Bruins Stanley Cup blowout party, okay? The province would foot the bill entirely. But the mayor seems to be afraid that the city's going to be on the hook for the bill after year one, and it's not true. The province has made it very clear that the funding is ongoing. So Toronto's basically been handed a couple of nurses to help with a couple of disadvantaged groups, immigrants and the poor. Now,
who voted for somebody else.
Yeah, even if, that's the point. Even if it ends up being just 1 year, that's better than no years, right? But at the mayor's urging, the executive council turned down the offer of two free, let me say it again, free nurses. Thankfully, there were some dissenters in this vote, and they may eventually rule the day by joining a pack of other councillors who could overturn the decision. Let's hope so. Now, the mayor could offer no real, tangible explanation as to why he'd oppose the implementation of two new public nurses free. No new expenditures to the city is a hang-up. 36 municipalities in Ontario, by the way, have been offered more public nurses with the cost incurred by the province. 35 have said yes. Why? Because 35 municipalities don't have Mayor Rob Ford. 35 municipalities don't have mayors who say things like, we have enough people in public health right now. We don't, of course. We do not. Everybody knows that. And even if we did, two more public nurses wouldn't harm the system any more than, say, two home runs would harm a Blue Jay lead.
What is that? A Blue Jay lead.
It hasn't been that bad a season.
Me right till the end.
My Bombay doors are now closed. I'd like Bill to open his, but I understand this will be very special too, won't it? I mean, Bill is the poet laureate of the podcast. He is our poet in residence.
Well, it's a little artsy in honor of Vancouver because that's what it's about.
All right.
And it's actually about the riots in Vancouver. There's a lesson, Don, from Vancouver where the Canucks fell one game short. It's prepare for all the mayhem when fans forget it's just a sport. You know, we all want to be winners, to share in all those joys, but when it doesn't happen, don't go rioting with the boys. What happens on nights like that? We're hearing lots of guesses. The cry goes up, let's riot, folks! Followed by a whole lot of yeses. But don't we know that that ain't right? That class is what should show? Why don't we teach our children, sometimes the best word is no?
It's wonderful. It's a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful. Hey, can I ask you something?
Sure.
Can you, in the future, can we ask you to, not that that wasn't great, up your game a little bit. Can we have some backing music a la Leonard Cohen? Or, even better, can you do a little, maybe go Gordy Downey on us here, all right?
You want me
and
to sing?
Sing a little bit.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Beautiful.
We'll do that once, and we'll notice that there's a severe drop-off in hits. Because there won't be any from me.
Continue on and talk about those riots, not as eloquently perhaps, and certainly with not nearly as many rhyming couplets. Something has come out of the riots, and it's public shaming Everything old is new again, Bill. Public shaming has come back. Everything comes back, right?
It does, yeah.
Bell bottoms, oh, shag carpeting, those mutton chops you have on your face right now. Everything comes back. So there's a different kind of scarlet letter, and that's the Facebook tag, right? And that's been happening. I kind of have mixed emotions about this. I don't know how you feel about it, but you know, I want people who were numbskull enough to perpetrate that violence on that beautiful city to be brought to justice. And part of it might be, in this the age that we live in, a photo goes up on Facebook. Does anyone know who this is? But you can take that too far, too, don't you think?
Well, that probably did happen here. I'm always amazed at the mentality of a mob. And, you know, if you get to where those people were before the situation with Facebook came up, what makes someone do what they did? And you can talk about a bunch of different kids on that and so on and so forth. But the fact that we live in an age where there is a Facebook, where there is a Twitter, where these kids live with that on a daily basis, how they could not think that this kind of thing was going to happen, yeah, is absolutely incredible to me.
I can't believe
that they would actually go ahead. I mean, I saw one. I don't know whether you saw this. A young lady coming out of the store after looting it, got herself a nice purse, and said to the, I guess she was asked, well, why do you have it? She said, well, I wanted it. Like, and you could see exactly who, hi, I'm Cheryl, and I just stole this. Yeah.
What? Everyone's doing it.
What? I don't get that.
But, you know, let's talk about the kid, you know, the water polo player,
mm-hmm,
with the University of Calgary on the national water polo team. He's been suspended.
17 years old.
17 years old. Now, I mean, what he did was reprehensible, and we can say what he did. I mean, usually you have to say allegedly.
No, you can see him
do
it.
He's admitted it, yep. And it also waived his right to privacy as a minor. He could have not been named, but he stepped forward. He had a very tearful media conference. I believe that he really has been humbled by this. I believe that he feels badly, but I also believe that he still needs to be punished. Look, good guys need to get punished too. I think that just ups the level of deterrence in the future. Hey, good guys can get punished too. Well, you know what I mean?
Of course. And the fact of the matter is he has been punished already. This outing is a tremendous shaming, and it's incredibly embarrassing, not just to him, but to his family, who have had to put up with a lot of nonsense as well because of the reaction of people.
That's where it goes too far. There, you know, this vigilantism that takes off. His dad, who's a doctor, had to shut down his practice and move the family out of the house, mm-hmm, because somebody put their address online and other people started threatening. You know,
that's way over the line.
That's why I say this can go too far. It can be a great tool to bring people to justice, but it shouldn't be used as a tool towards vigilante justice.
I think, though, Don, that you know, stuff like this has to get out, and sometimes it has to happen so that we get the proper effect from it. And no, I'm not for a moment suggesting it's a good thing that the family got harassed the way they did. But I do think in the future, you can't allow this kind of behavior to happen again.
Right.
And if you show to people that if you're going to do something like this, there will be some kind of either a punishment or something that you will have to answer to, maybe it won't happen again.
This is The Gist of It with Hayes and Landry.
So some of the Boston Bruins had a very swanky party last Saturday night after they had the parade in the amphibious...
The duck things, the duck boats. My
the
God.
The duck boats.
What is that?
I'm not
Other than
sure.
embarrassing. Really. Let's have a parade. Who's got a duck boat?
Well, it's way cool. You get to drive on streets and then you get to go in water too. But after that was all over, they went to a casino. I can't remember the name of it. Some private room, mm-hmm, somewhere. The bill was over $150,000.
$156,679.74.
Seems like a lot, Bill. But when you subtract a $100,000 bottle of champagne from that, it's a mere 50-some-odd thousand dollars. And
oh, yeah, of course. Pikers.
$100,000 for a bottle of champagne. Now, a friend of mine pointed out to me, well, it's not just one bottle. It's like a giant bottle.
30 liters.
Oh, okay. Still, I mean, how is this a good idea? No, you know what? I think I do know how this came across as a good idea.
How?
Have you seen the bill?
Yes. Not the whole thing itemized. No.
I have seen it. The $100,000 champagne is at the bottom of the bill.
Mm-hmm.
So you had some $50,000 worth of drinking going on, and then somebody went, $100,000 bottle of champagne. We'd be stupid not to get it. Let's get it. We could win the Stanley Cup. Get it, bring it. That's probably how that played out.
You know, the question I have, Don, is who stocks a $100,000 bottle of champagne? How long could that thing have been sitting there?
You know, I got an idea. Well, bring in the 30-liter one. We'll sell it.
I love that. Yeah.
Are you kidding?
Managers probably, that day too, ticked at the sommelier. You miserable SOB. We've got a $100,000 bottle of champagne sitting in our wine cellar right now. It's been there for a year. Hey, look, here come the Bruins with a Stanley Cup. This could be fun. And then before you know it, there goes the $100,000 bottle of champagne.
Can you imagine, though, if maybe they'd had it too long? Maybe it's flat. At $100,000, $100,000 of flat champagne. What are you kidding?
You crack it open, you take one sip. This won't do. I'm sorry, we're sending this back. I don't. Some other things on the bill. I mean, up above the $100,000 bottle of champagne, there was a normal sized bottle of champagne, I guess, and it said 0.00 beside it. So it's nice to know.
Oh, you got to comp them something.
Some of the stuff got comped. There were Red Bulls on, again, near the top. And this all, domino theories, Bill, right? This all plays together. A bunch of Red Bulls, but the majority of the Red Bulls were sugar-free.
Really?
I didn't even know there was a sugar-free Red Bull. Who wants a Red Bull would want a sugar-free Red Bull?
Don, diabetics have to stay awake too. Don, let's stick a little bit with the Twitter thing because
Have pictures to show me?
As a matter of fact, yes, there is a picture. It's a picture from a bar showing Ryan Dunn, who was part of the, and I say was, sadly, part of the Jackass franchise, one of the co-stars of the TV show and the movies. And he died tragically in a car accident along with one of the guys in the picture with him. Shortly after, he had tweeted a picture of himself at a bar imbibing. And what happened then was Roger Ebert, oddly enough, sent a tweet that said, "Friends, don't let jackasses drink and drive." And
Yeah. Boy,
has he been buried with all kinds of vitriol. Because
that's hilarious.
You think?
Roger Ebert is... No, I said that with did I not?
Oh, it was sarcastic. Yeah. Okay, all right.
Seriously? Well, maybe we should try that again.
No,
because that's hilarious.
I see what you're saying. Okay.
Yeah.
No, you're right.
It's a glib thing to put on Twitter soon after a guy dies in a fiery car wreck. But, you know, a lot of people put glib things on soon after something happens. And guess what, Bill? They get in trouble. The lesson has been learned over and over and over and over again. If you have half a brain, don't tweet the glib line right away. If you're a famous person, hold it back a little bit. Judge it a little later.
I don't know. I didn't find this glib at all. I thought that what he was actually reacting to was a tragedy that had been preceded by a dumb picture. And I think what he did was put two and two together.
Picture?
What's a dumb picture of a guy at a bar
picture?
With a couple of his pals?
Got,
and then 2 hours later,
him drinking in a bar doesn't mean he drove drunk. I'm not, you know, I just don't have any information,
but it's pretty,
that suggests he was. How many pictures,
suggestive.
Do you have any pictures of you in a bar holding a drink? And if you do have pictures of you holding a drink in a bar, am I to take the suggestion from it that you overdrink every time you're in a bar? How about that was the only drink you had?
The naked one of me, by the way, wasn't me. And it wasn't
a bar.
It
was Anthony Weiner.
It was in a basement.
My head on
but
top.
That's another story. No, quite seriously. I mean, I get that, and I get that people would be upset with Ebert, but I also understand where he's coming from.
Yeah.
He's seeing something. Keep in mind that Ryan Dunn is a guy that people look up to as well, and they see that tweet, they see the picture, and then 2 hours later he's dead. I think a lot of people would have done what he did, put two and two together, and gotten four. We don't know yet.
You don't
if
need
it
to
is
fire
four,
that out on Twitter. I mean, people are saddened by a somewhat famous person's passing, they're going
yep.
to react with vitriol. But again, it goes back to, you know, a theme that recurs in these podcasts. We talk about, you know, overreacting. We just did talk about that, you know, outing people and or, you know, mm-hmm. vigilantism. But Roger Ebert what he received in return was outrageous as well.
Absolutely.
People went beyond what he had done when it came to glibness and just got downright mean.
Yeah.
And, you know, talked about, you know, the obvious troubles he's been through and how he looks facially now.
Disfigured because of cancer.
Of cancer.
Yeah.
Very obnoxiously, horrifically, monstrously rude stuff, and no place for that.
Can I make a suggestion? And I don't know whether this can actually be done, but let's throw out a rule. You and I can adhere to this, and all maybe right. Someone else will pick it up and go, you know, that's not bad. Before you tweet, count to 10. You can write it, but before you actually hit send, count to 10.
Twitter should have on it. Well, they won't do it. You know what? Because one of their great strengths is this kind of stuff happens.
Absolutely. People talk about it all the time.
But it would be great. Are you sure you want to tweet? And then you hit it again.
Yeah.
Are you really sure you want to tweet this? Of course, they'll never put that safeguard in. So it is up to you again, as a responsible, intelligent adult, to go, do I send this or do I not?
And I'll tell you what. I'll do it. I'll count to 10. And to make sure I'm really thinking about it, I'll do it in Russian.
This is The Gist of It with Hayes and Landry.
Don, I'm always fascinated that people will actually spend time watching a pro sport draft. This week we have the NBA draft, we have the NHL draft, we recently had the NFL draft, the CFL draft. I mean,
Homer Simpson watched the CFL draft. I don't know if you ever,
I think he might have been picked.
20 years ago, 15 years ago. How long is it? Simpson? About 15 years ago, there was an episode where Homer
actually watched
the
CFL
draft. He's lying on
the
couch and you just hear on the TV. And I think it was in like round two, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders looking to, you know, up the
Genius.
Number of rouges. Yeah, it was very funny.
Yeah, it's. But the fact is, these things are on TV because people watch them. I am in dire need of a life. And if I ever need to prove it, it's because I park my ass in front of a TV to watch people I've never heard of win the lottery. That's what it is. Seriously.
That is basically what it is. It's the same story over and over again. And when I was a younger man, I think it meant more to me. And, you know, I'll probably watch. You know, the first overall pick is always interesting, even if it's going to be Mario Lemieux. I mean, even if you know, it's still a moment. Well, that, you know, that was a great moment. And I'm thinking Eric Lindros, too. That had its...
Yeah,
it's special drama too.
Both of them, yeah.
But I mean, after a few picks, you kind of go, all right, lots of hugging, tearful parents, jersey goes on, you're going to be the next Bob Orr, and we're so happy to have you. And then that's just enough of it. But I've always been the game is the thing kind of guy.
Right, okay.
So all of this other stuff is interesting to me, but I just, you know, put the kid on the ice, on the field, and then we'll see what's going on. The rest of it is just kind of distraction, kind of background noise.
What fascinates me about it is you have fans of different teams, and you know, with the 30th pick, the Toronto Maple Leafs take Bruno Labskabadachi. And people, Bruno, yeah,
he won't be available when they pick Bell.
No,
that's a ridiculous example.
Probably,
he will not go. He will not fall that far.
These people have never seen him.
The first thing that comes out is, I can't believe he was still available.
You know, that's exactly right. It's insane. But, you know, it's interesting. The genesis of this whole thing about seeing drafts on TV and having some success with it came from ESPN. James Andrew Miller, Tom Shales wrote a book recently called Those Guys Have All the Fun. It's the ESPN story. Fascinating stuff, how the network got going.
Yeah.
Because now, hey, they're the worldwide leader in sports. Just ask them.
Ask them.
And there were a bunch of different things that happened to make that the case, not least of which when they went to the NFL, I think it was 1987 or 86, sometime around then, before they had any NFL games on TV, and they suggested, we'll show the draft. And people were agog, like, what? You know, what? Who cares?
Yeah.
Because no one believed there was any audience.
No.
And especially, think about it. It was Sunday afternoon. Okay, Sunday afternoons for the NFL was always a big deal,
yeah.
But it was also Sunday afternoon when the weather was nice. People could do things like have a life. Apparently not. And it's become huge since then. It's it's an amazing story. By the way, that book is incredible too.
Yeah,
the ESPN guys, an amazing story, how it got going and how it got to where it is today.
You know, let's stay with ESPN here and talk about something that's been top of mind for sports fans around here all week, and that is where Toronto ranks when it comes to I can't remember what the poll's called. Is it a power poll or something like that? Or you know, anyway, they listed 122 different professional sports teams in the NHL, MLB, NBA, NFL. Any of those teams, were eligible to be on this list. And the Toronto Maple Leafs came out at number 120. I mean, the Raptors are not far ahead of them. I think the Blue Jays, can't remember exactly.
They were in the 90s, I believe.
But at any rate, you clump it all together. Toronto is pretty much the worst sports town in
North America.
That's
what they said, not pretty much. They said it was.
When it comes to performance. Yes. I say look on the bright side here. The Leafs are ranked 120th out of 122 teams. You could be the Washington Redskins or the Cincinnati Bengals. That's partly the good news. The other good news is last year they were number 121. So, Bill, don't tell me rebuilding is not working because we have signs of it working. And at this rate,
oh, yeah.
Leaf fans, your team will top this chart and help me with math the year 2130.
35, yeah. No, look, it's an insult.
Be patient.
It's an insult to the city of Toronto. It really is. And it's not because of the fans. Because although, if you read it the right way, it's saying that the fans are idiots because... The biggest thing in this whole thing, there's like six or seven criteria they're looking at. Success of the team, how much bang for the buck.
Fan relationship, ownership, affordability, stadium experience.
Yeah, and let's face it, they here in this city, we fall flat on all of those different levels. I look at the Toronto Maple Leafs as an example. You cannot find a franchise that makes the kind of money they do, and... When was the last time they were in the playoffs? And yeah, I understand they want to make the playoffs. Of course they do. But they're also making a whole lot of money, and they're costing an awful lot of money for people to go and see.
You think this survey basically illustrates that Toronto sports fans are saps? I look at it a different perspective here in that I think it illustrates how unconditionally and unbridled their love for their sports teams is. That's how I look at this.
Well, here's the thing. If you go to...
You really love a sport and a team. You go and you see... Look, I know. You know, too. I mean, you've gone to your fair share of games.
Are you going to tell me... Tickets, yep.
I'm an Argo season ticket holder. You're a Leaf season ticket.
Yep.
Are you going to tell me that... What, did you stop going because they were terrible? No, you loved. You went. You hoped for better. It doesn't make you a sap. It makes you a fan.
I disagree because I think in... Let's just take the Leafs as an example. And their record and the prices that they charge. Let's say they were in Atlanta and they'd be in Winnipeg. But so the fact
for
is,
now.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing is, they know they can gouge you. I go into the ACC and all I see is money. And it's not money going into my pocket. It's money going into their pocket. And I know that's all they care about. And it ticks me off.
Listen, I'd like to hear more from you on this topic, but I got to go. I'm in a bit of a hurry. The Arena Football League draft is on. Let's wrap it up.
Don, contrary to what people might think, we actually do get in contact with each other through the week to come up with things we're going to talk about.
Plan.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, you know.
We pretty much discard everything when we sit down, don't we?
That's about it. Yeah. It's a broad use of the word plan, but... but the thing is, we talk about it. And one of the things we're going to talk about today is the passing of the big man, Clarence Clemons. 69 years old, yeah. An integral part of the E Street Band, and a guy that I think will be sadly missed. He had a stroke about a week ago and then never recovered from it. And it's too bad. But the guy was an absolute genius. He was incredible.
Yes.
And as a matter of fact, one of the things you were suggesting was that his sax solo in a Springsteen song is, you for your money, the best ever. Which one? What song?
Jungle
is it?
Land. I know you're familiar with Jungle Land, and the sax solo in the middle of it. I don't know. Can you ever say it's the best? But to me, it is. It's the most memorable sax solo I've ever heard. It's my favorite. I have my iPod here. And cue it up. This will not sound good, will it?
Should no, well, you know what?
It won't do. I mean, I don't even know if people can hear that.
Well, a little bit.
Anyway, yeah.
But it's brilliant.
It is fantastic. It still, to this day, sends shivers up and down my spine once in a while when I have it really cranked, driving along in my car. It's just, he gets to a certain level in the middle of this, and you think, this is the most wonderful thing I've ever heard. And then... It gets loftier at some point and just takes that song, which is a brilliant song, to heights that it would not have attained without it. It is. You know what? Forget about my... It is the best sax solo of all time.
I have to disagree with you on that. And by no means am I suggesting that it isn't a great song and a great performance by Clarence Clemons. It is. It's a great tune. And as a matter of fact, that's the period when I think Springsteen was at his best with the E Street Band. And almost everything they did then was exceptional. But Jungle Land, maybe above all, except for Born to Run. I'm sorry, but that's near and dear to my heart. But when it comes to sax solos, I can think of two. One that's probably on a par with that, and one that, for my money, is the best ever. The one on a par is Junior Walker, the piece he did for Foreigner and Urgent, which I thought was incredible.
Okay. That's
just an amazing piece of music.
It's not even close to what I've just been talking about, but that's fine.
Well, okay, but I have another.
You're just warming up.
I have another that I think is the best, and for a couple of reasons. One of which is that I remember the first time I heard it and how it stood out from everything else that I was listening to at the time and that was pretty much available at the time. Somewhat similar to Springsteen, because he had the same kind of impact when he first came out. But the song I'm referring to and the artist, I'll throw out who it was.
All right.
Rayfield Ravensbrook.
Rayfield Ravensbrook. No.
The name doesn't ring a bell.
No, DB for the Denver Broncos in the 70s?
Never. No. No, as a matter of fact, it was pretty much his one claim to fame, too. He is the guy who did the sax solo on Jerry Rafferty's Baker Street.
Oh!
And that,
that's
to
good.
Me, is the best ever.
It's good. Yeah. It's not as good as what you just did, but
yeah, well,
that's excellent, too. I'll grant you that.
I just think that sometimes, and maybe in this particular instance, that's what it was for me. It was a particular point in my life that I was having a great time, and it stood out so much. And I think music does that.
A lot of sax at that time
absolutely.
Of your life. Bill.
Yes, it was a one of the reasons
sax.
Why I like it as much.
Yeah,
absolutely. But the point is that, you know, you think about it, and I think that's one of the things that music does for us. It brings back periods of time, or you have memories that you somehow tie into music. And for me, Baker Street, Jerry Rafferty ties into a great time in my life.
Rest in peace, Clarence Clemons. Not in too much peace, though. You know what I hope? I hope he's wailing away up there with the likes of Hendrix and Buddy Holly and all the rest of them.
I just hope I'm not hearing him live anytime soon.
Well, no doubt we've reached the point in this podcast where people are yelling at their computer screens or at their iPod. And you know, Bill, as well as I do. Get to the Senate reform. When will Bill and Don talk about Senate reform? We're going to talk about Senate reform right now. And I've thought long and hard about Senate reform. And here's what I have to say about Senate reform.
Don?
Yeah, no, I'll have the pancakes, please. Sure. Oh, what were we talking about?
Yeah, Senate reform. Yeah.
Ah, here's my Senate reform. Get rid of it.
Really?
The only Senate, I mean...
Blow it up.
I'd like to see a triple E Senate if all of those E's stood for the word extinct. That's it. It probably had its place 130 years ago. Maybe it had its place 70 years ago. I don't know.
You're not alone in that.
It doesn't have much of a place right now. It's a receptacle for partisan hacks.
Oh, of course it is. It's a way to pay off your pals. It's the way to pay off the people who have been making money, the bagmen for the party, or all kinds of different things. But the fact of the matter is, the Conservative Party as we see them now with Stephen Harper, and you go back to when the Alliance before that and the Reform Party before that, were all about either the Triple E Senate or abolishing it altogether.
Yeah.
It hasn't happened. And you know what, Don? It won't.
It's not going to happen in the
foreseeable
future. And you know what? We don't want to even spend too much time on this. Okay, if it were up to me, again, never mind reforming it. Just get rid of it. The reform should be, you know, gutting the Senate chamber and turning it, as Jesse Eisenberg said, as Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network,
mm-hmm.
Turn it into the ping pong room, all right? That's what they can do with it. Turn it into anything else. Or if they want to, you know, adjust the seats in the House of Commons, well, then you've got your big House of Commons and the little House of Commons for, you know, rookie backbenchers or something like that.
So really, it's an architectural bonus.
It's an architectural bonus. Still with politics, if you don't mind, I would just like to say that I am very happy to see that the thousands who gathered in the streets of Vancouver to watch the NDP convention on big screens behaved.
Yeah, okay.
Also, happy to know that at least for now, the NDP has decided they won't drop the word socialism or socialist from their constitution, and they will not rule out a merger with the Liberals, which to me, the way they are right now is like the NHL and WHA merger, yeah. Okay? I mean, with the NDP being the NHL.
Well, here's the thing. I mean, realistically, both the NDP and the Liberals have a marketing problem. And that is their words. The socialism is a bad word. Yeah. Liberal is a bad word.
Yeah.
Why? Because a lot of people on the right wing will fight for stuff. Logic aside, they don't, because things don't have to make sense. And they'll say, you know, this is bad. Socialism is bad. You know, socialism is not bad. I'll tell you why. Look at our healthcare system. I've had to use it. My family's had to use it. And anytime we needed it, it was there for us. There was no delays. If you really needed something, it got done. That's not the way it is south of the border. I'm sorry. But socialism in that context works. It works for all of us. I'm a big fan of things that work. And I'm not a big fan of people who are jerks. And I think a lot of those people who fight against the word socialism, the word liberal, who make both of those sound like dirty words,
yeah,
have no idea. There's no context behind what they say. They throw stuff at the wall, and that's what they hope sticks.
And socialists and liberals need to reclaim those words.
Absolutely.
That's what they, you know, instead of, so that's why I'm glad the NDP has decided, at least for now, to not back away from that, because there are many great aspects to socialism. We've lived it through our whole life. Don't get caught up in the ridiculous partisan comic rhetoric that is drifting up from south of the border and now is starting to take hold here.
Oh, don't kid yourself. It's here.
It's not either or, okay? And socialism, by the way, and to a certain extent, communism, people have decided that they both mean totalitarianism in a way, don't you? They go back to Soviet Russia.
That's right. Yep.
And what is happening in China.
And all the negative connotations to those.
Totalitarianism is terrible. Nobody wants... But look at... Socialism, to a certain extent, is good for all of us and has been throughout my lifetime as well. I mean, even at its simplest form, I mean, who do you think is plowing your streets? It's because we got together as a collective and decided that we should have someone governmentally who does that. All of these different
schools.
Programs. Schools, public schools, that's socialism. In the United States, it's laughable to think that anybody down there believes they are defending these great hordes of socialists. They've been living it at least partially down there too. They've got public schools. Mm-hmm. They've got a social security system, which, what do you think that is? So it's a big lie by the Republicans in the United States that they're fighting off creeping socialism. It's been there for decades.
Wouldn't you say the bastion for anti-socialist rhetoric is Wall Street?
Yeah.
And who was it that saved Wall Street? The government.
It's Don Landry and Bill Hayes, and you're getting the gist of it.
I'm all about the royal visit, Bill. I am ready for... I get excited by the... Let me just give you an illustration. Remember
please,
the royal
please do.
Wedding?
I got to hear this.
April 29th, 2011. Do you remember where you were? I know where I was. Look, you had to get up way early to watch that. So mm-hmm. You know what I did? I hired 4 beefeater trumpeters to stand below my bedroom window to trumpet at 4 in the morning. That was my alarm clock
you're
to get
nuts.
Up and watch the royal wedding. Oh, it was... Great treat. Neighbors, I think, all enjoyed it as well because they were probably getting up to watch the wedding. If the royals are not coming, Kate and Will are not coming to Toronto, it's a great slap in the face to the Queen City. I think Toronto's called the Queen City.
Sure.
I think every city is called the Queen City, actually. And I got to thinking, you know what? If they were to come to Toronto, where is the one place I would want to take them? And I decided Casa Loma.
Really?
Why?
Okay, why?
For the irony. Here's what I would do. I would be all excited about it. You're not going to believe this is wonderful. I'd take them into Casa Loma and just pretend like they've never seen anything like this. Be like, look at this foyer. I'm sure you have never seen anything like this before. And you're like, this is the most opulent of opulence. Meantime, they would be behind me going, this is like our linen closet at one of our castles, buddy.
Yeah.
And I'd just take them all the way through pretending as though they had never seen anything like it.
Well, speaking of never seeing anything like it, I would take them to some place I know they haven't seen anything like. And that's the public washrooms at Yonge and Dundas.
You take everybody to the public washrooms at Yonge and Dundas.
True enough. And the royal family would probably be less expensive than most. But the point is that those are exceptionally clean public washrooms. Yeah. And I think they need to see that, you know?
Just change your terminology to loo.
Okay.
And then I think everything will be fine. They're going to be all over the place. Calgary Stampede. You know what I say? Stampede, embrace it. Wouldn't you like to see a corgi roping competition? And... again, do I have this wrong? They're going to the territories, and they're supposed to be taking part in a ball hockey game. I would love it if Kate just, like, you know, wasted the prime minister with an elbow, stole the ball, and went roof on William.
Yeah.
And she's just got this mean hockey monster.
I see that in her. As a matter of fact, I was thinking of her just the other day. I watched A League of Their Own, and I saw Rosie O'Donnell playing third base, and I went, that's Kate Middleton.
When the Royals come, I will be amused.
And when the Royals come, I will be asleep.
I think we've done enough damage for another week. But as we go, I mean, we talked about Clarence Clemons and the great sax solos in modern music
and Raphael Ravensbrook.
Yes. I would like to ask you, in your opinion, what might be the greatest bagpipe solo in modern music history?
Bagpipe?
You got your Mull of Kintyre. It's great, but you know what? You know what I go for? You're the Voice, John Farnham.
John Farnham, that's a good choice, good song. Can't say that about Mull of Kintyre. I would say Big Country's In a Big Country, but the other one, AC/DC. It's a long way to the top if you want to rock and roll. All right.
We've missed it completely. The greatest bagpipe solo in the history of modern music is Amazing Grace, and it's bagpipe all the way through. If it's done properly, right? So, bagpipes, as I understand it, telling me a while ago that it's a sheep's stomach for the
I think that's where it came from originally. Yeah.
So when you have to make a choice, you're either having the haggis or the bag. You have to choose between dinner and after dinner entertainment. You can't have both.
It's like Sophie's Choice.
Not really.
Oh my God. And there's another pipe I think called Julian. Weird spelling. It's the Irish equivalent of the bagpipes. Of course, bagpipes are Scottish, with the sheep. And I think with the Irish, it's the goats. I'm not sure, but that's certainly the way.
You know what, Bill? It sounds like you've got an awful lot of bagpipe knowledge in your head. Next week, full podcast, nothing but bagpipes. The history of the bagpipe with Bill Hayes. I'll just kind of introduce it and get out of your way.
And that's the gist of it for another week. The Gist of It is available every Wednesday afternoon through iTunes or at donlandry.com.